begins with a Mangala Charana, so you can have a look through that if you want, and you'll see these different types of verses appearing. Now, down here on the your bottom left of the blackboard, then we also mention that there are also often the Mangala Charana will also often describe four things. And in this case, this Mangala Charana does. And of course, as we go through the verses, we'll point out the different places where these occur. So one is Adhikari. The Mangala Charana may state the Adhikari. Adhikari means the qualification of the reader. Yeah, who may or may not be able to read this particular book. Then the three other terms, Sambandha, Abhideya, of course that is also Vishaya sometimes, Prayojana, we've had contact with these terms, you've heard these terms I imagine before. But here there's a slightly different meaning. Sambandha, in this case, means particularly the relationship. Sambandha literally means relationship. In this case, it means the relationship between the book and its subject. Not, you know, in the broader or more absolute type of sense that I think we're used to hearing the term applied in, that Sambandha means the relationship between Krishna and us, or Krishna and everything. But this, here we're talking about a book. Different books. Mangala Charanas. Series of verses which are introducing and establishing the mood and so on for the book which is about to be presented. So, in this case then, Sambandha means the relationship between the book itself and the subject. Or in other words, how the book is going to deal with the subject like that. Because it could deal with the subject in many ways. It could question the subject, for example. In this case, it's not going to question the subject really. It's going to establish the subject. This is in the case of Tattvasandarbha. First of all, it's going to establish, and then it's going to describe. It might simply describe. So anyway, this Sambandha here then means the relationship between the book and the subject. Then, third, we say Vishaya or Abhideya. Abhideya, of course, normally we've heard this term used in the sense of the process for realizing the relationship which we, you know, got some understanding of to start off with. But in this case, Abhideya, well, Vishaya means very literally the subject itself, talking about the subject, and Abhideya is synonymous there. The subject itself will be described. And then Prayojana, of course, normally Prayojana means the goal of life, at least in the context that we have heard the term used. But in this context, it means, what will the gain be for the reader? What can the reader hope to get out of the book? And, you know, out of the book and by following what the book says to do, like that. What will the reader gain by reading the book and following the process that the book advocates, or whatever instructions the book presents? So, oftentimes, it's not like a hard and fast rule exactly, but oftentimes a Mangala Charana will include these four, and in this case it does, in the case of Tattvasandarbha. So that is a little bit about what is a Mangala Charana. Now, let us read the Mangala Charana. As we go through Tattva Sandarbha, we are going to read the whole book. Not the Sanskrit always, but we're going to read the translations always. So I'm just going to read through now texts 1 to 8, and you can follow in your books. So text 1, of course, very famous verse from the 11th canto. Krishna Varanam Trisha Krishnam Sango Pangastra Parishadam Yagyai Sankirtana Prayerya Jantihi Sumedasa. In the age of Kali, intelligent persons perform congregational chanting to worship the incarnation of Godhead, who constantly sings the names of Krishna. Although his complexion is not blackish, he is Krishna himself. He is accompanied by his associates, servants, weapons, and confidential companions. Text 2. In this age of Kali, we have taken shelter of Lord Krishna Chaitanya by congregationally chanting the Lord's holy names and performing other devotional practices. Blackish within, but golden without, he exhibits all his opulences, beginning with his bodily features. Text 3. All glories to Srila Rupa and Srila Sanatan in the land of Mathura. Having enlightened me in the true science, they are inspiring me to write this book. And you can just note there, I did say that this offering benedictions, this aspect of a Mangala Charana, offering blessings, that there's a little bit more to it than might immediately occur to you. So here we say that this particular verse, as a Mangala Charana verse, it's obviously paying respects, that's clear, but it's offering blessings. What does this mean? Does this mean that Jiva Goswami is offering blessings to Rupa and Sanatan? Not really, because Rupa is his spiritual master, and Sanatan is also like his Siksha Guru. Anyway, we'll talk about that when we go through the verses in a little more detail. Text 4. A friend of theirs, a Bhatta scholar from a family of South Indian Brahmins, composed the original edition of this book after studying the writings of venerable Vaishnavas. Text 5. That first edition of this work was a rough draft, with some parts in topical order and others not, and with some parts only suggestive fragments. So I, an insignificant jiva, have carefully gone over the manuscript and rewritten it more systematically. So these two verses, 4 and 5, they're discussing the origin of the book and in terms of preliminary work done by Gopal Bhatta Goswami, another one of the six Goswamis. Text 6. Only those who have no desire other than to worship the lotus feet of Lord Krishna should read this book. Everyone else I warn off with my curse. Hare Krishna. Well, okay, we'll talk about that when we get to it. Pretty powerful statement there. Text 7. Now I bow down to my initiating spiritual master and to my spiritual masters who taught me the meaning of Srimad Bhagavatam. In other words, his Siksha Gurus also. Having done this, I declare my desire to present this encyclopedic work, Sri Bhagavat Sandarbha. Of course, if you remember from yesterday, we did read through the names of all the six Sandarbhas, and there is one, the third one, which is called Bhagavat Sandarbha. So the thing is that the whole group of six is sometimes called Bhagavat Sandarbha, or perhaps more commonly perhaps, but anyway, at least as an alternative, Shatsandarbhas or the six Sandarbhas, but it is also sometimes called Bhagavat Sandarbha, the whole set of six, plus the third one is also called Bhagavat Sandarbha, because it's dealing with Bhagavan specifically, as we mentioned yesterday. So in this sense, he's referring to the whole six, that he is embarking on this huge task of writing the six Sandarbhas. And then text 8. Lord Krishna's abstract feature of pure spiritual existence often goes by the name Brahman in the texts of the Vedas. His partial expansion as the Lord of creation regulates the material nature, Maya, and exerts his control through further personal expansions. A single manifestation of his personality, called Narayan, rules sovereign in the transcendental sky beyond this universe. May that same Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, be pleased to grant pure love for himself to those who worship his lotus feet in this world. So now let us just go through one by one, briefly, each verse. Each verse is, worthy of a whole class in itself. And, but the thing is we don't have time, unfortunately, so we'll briefly go through each verse, particularly in terms of the various points that we've extracted under the heading commentary, which follows the translation of each verse. So here, text 1, there are 4 points. There are many points, so many points, but we'll just refer to these 4. Well, the principle of Mangalacharana we already discussed, so that's done. Then the Yuga avatars. Well, we could just mention, I imagine most of you would be aware, that this verse appears in the second chapter of the 11th canto. King Nimi is being instructed by Karavajana Muni. And among other things, they discuss the Yuga avatars. They discuss the Yuga avatars. The fifth chapter, actually. The fifth chapter of the 11th canto. They discuss the Yuga avatars. First of all, Satya Yuga, then Treta, then Dwarapara. Krishna is described as the Yuga avatar for Dwarapara, even though he appeared right at the end. Dwarapara Yuga is 864,000 years. It's long. And Yuga avatar, now you might think that the Yuga avatar, that he should appear at the beginning, it would make more sense to establish the Yuga Dharma. Anyway, in this case, Krishna appeared right at the very end, 125 years before the end. Normally, the Yuga avatar for Dwarapara Yuga, he's also a blackish avatar. His name is Shama. Kavi Karnapur talks about him briefly in Gaur Ganadesh Dipika. So this verse then, this particular verse here, 11.5.32, is spoken by Karabhajana Rishi in response to King Nimi's question that, is there an avatar? Is there an avatar in the Kali Yuga? You may have heard, sometimes Krishna is called Tri Yuga, which means he appears in three yugas, but there are 4 yugas. He, in fact, in the Bhagavatam, I don't know the exact reference, but it's in the 7th canto. It's in the 7th canto where Prahlad and Lord Nrisimha are studying, discussing, I think Prahlad speaks this verse and says that because your appearance in Kali Yuga is channa, channa means hidden, therefore you're sometimes called Tri Yuga. Now, we make the next point that we note here is how Sridhar Swami interprets this verse. Just for the sake of interest, really, Sridhar Swami, of course, he appeared quite some time before Lord Chaitanya. So he was not in that fortunate position, really, to know who the Yuga avatar was for this Kali Yuga. So, he says kind of very interesting thing. In interpreting a number of the words, I'll just mention one important word here, Twisha Krishnam in the first line. Twisha Krishnam. So, Krishna, in this context, Twisha Krishnam refers to the complexion. Now, of course, we have the verse translated here. Anyway, this is coming from, that's coming from Jiva Goswami, that's the next point. But Sridhar Swami, who was not aware of Lord Chaitanya, which is not his fault, but he was just not aware, so he was not in a position to explain things in the way that Jiva Goswami is in a position to. But he says, he makes a very interesting point. Instead of saying that this Twisha Krishnam can be, because it's a compound of two words, can be broken down into Twisha and Akrishnam. He says it's Twisha Krishnam, that his complexion is blackish. Twisha means his complexion. Twisha Krishnam. Krishna in this context means blackish. So of course we take it that the ah, the long ah, twisha, that it is a combination of twisha and akrishna. Yeah. That's the way we take it. That's the way we take it. And that's the way Jiva Goswami takes it. So you know what Sridhar Swami says? He says that seeing this verse here is describing the Yuga avatar for Kali Yuga, and it's saying Twisha Krishnam, that his complexion is blackish, then that means that Krishna is the Yuga avatar for Dwarapara Yuga and Kali Yuga. Interesting interpretation. Anyway, he didn't know about Lord Chaitanya, and of course, we're not really in a position here to go really deeply into analyzing why Jiva Goswami's interpretation and our Sampradaya's interpretation of this Twisha Krishnam is actually more correct. But at least we definitely take it like that. That Twisha Krishnam means Twisha Akrishnam. His complexion is Akrishnam, not blackish, but golden. Now, Akrishnam certainly means not blackish, but it doesn't necessarily mean golden directly. So how do we interpret it to mean golden then? Well, we interpret it in that way because there are a number of reasons, actually, but most important is that when Garga Muni performed the name-giving ceremony for Krishna and Balaram, that is described in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, he told Nanda Maharaj that this boy, Krishna, he has appeared in a white form, in a red form, and now he's appearing in a black form. He also appears in a yellow form. He says that very clearly, Garga Muni. Yeah. So, Satya Yuga, the whitish form, has already appeared, Lord Kapila. Treta Yuga, the reddish form, Lord Yajna, has already appeared. Krishna has already appeared, blackish form, in Dwarapara Yuga. There's only the yellow or golden form left. And this is Srimad Bhagavatam, which is stating it very clearly, that he does appear in a golden form, as a Yuga avatar specifically. So, in this way, this is one of the evidences, like quite clear evidences, that the Twisha Krishnam word should be understood as Twisha Akrishnam. His complexion is not blackish. That indicates golden. That is Lord Chaitanya. Okay, now text 1, in terms of it being a Mangalacharana verse. This is a Mangalacharana verse of type 1, Vastu Nirdesha. It is establishing that this book is about Krishna. Sridharaswami said his complexion is blackish. Twisha, which means complexion. Krishnam. Krishna means, in this context, black. Yeah. So Jiva Goswami interprets that Twisha Krishnam is a form, the compound form of the two words Twisha and Akrishnam. And then in his purport, Jiva Goswami also wrote a purport to this called Sarva Samvadni. He verifies his translation in a number of ways. We'd definitely spend at least the whole class just going through this verse only to really get into it. But one of the most important reasons that he says that he is interpreting this verse to mean Lord Chaitanya is on the basis of that verse spoken by Garga Muni. Yeah. Where he's talking about the Yuga avatars, and he says that Krishna appears in a yellowish form. Yeah. In the Kali Yuga. He commented on the whole Srimad Bhagavatam. I don't have his commentary on that verse from the 10th canto available, so I think let's just leave it at that and move on to the second verse. So we said then that this first verse is of the Vastu Nirdesha type. It is defining the subject. What is the subject? Krishna. Krishna. Text 2 is... Now, one other point I must mention about text 1 is that normally in Mangalacharanas, the first verse is the author's own composition. Like in Chaitanya Charitamrita, the first verse is Vande Gurun Isha Bhaktan Isham Ava Tarakam Tat Prakashams Tatach Chakti Krishna Chaitanya Samgyakam. I offer my respectful obeisances to the spiritual masters, the devotees of the Lord, the Lord's incarnations, His plenary portions, His energies, and the primeval Lord Himself, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Normally it's done like that. The author gives some special verse. Chaitanya Bhagavat is the same. There's a very beautiful verse, the beginning of Chaitanya Bhagavat, composed by Vrindavan Das Thakur. Here, Jiva Goswami has chosen to quote a Bhagavatam verse. The thing is that the whole Satsandarbhas are all based on the Bhagavatam. So he wants to draw that point out from the very outset, from the very first verse. So there's significance in that sense. Then text 2. Text 2 is... an original verse, of course, by Jiva Goswami. It is defining or like further analyzing the meaning of text 1 is like, in his own words, he is expressing what text 1 means, that it's glorifying Lord Chaitanya. And it's offering obeisances, so it's of the namaskar variety, the third variety. And again, there are many interesting points, but one particularly interesting point is that it says that Lord Chaitanya exhibits all his opulences in the Sanskrit, in the second line. This is where the statement is made. Darshitangadi vaibhavam. That he is giving darshan of his vaibhavas, his opulences and special qualities. Anga adi. Anga means his body. So he is giving darshan of his special opulences and qualities, beginning with his body. And anga also means like his parts and parcels, or his very intimate devotees. Lord Nityananda, Advaita Acharya, Gadadhar, like this. So anga can be understood in those two terms, but then it's anga adi. Anga adi means beginning with these two things. And a nice point is that Lord Chaitanya, of course, he's very beautiful and his associates are very wonderful, but he has a special quality which no other avatar has. Even Krishna doesn't have it, or at least have it like he has it, to put it that way. That is his mercy. So this, when it says that darshatangadi vaibhavam, he is exhibiting his opulences, then particularly it is really pointing to that opulence of his mercy. This is the distinguishing characteristic of Lord Chaitanya. Then, verse 3. So, this is obviously paying respect, that's clear, to his initiating spiritual master, Rupa Goswami, and Sanatan Goswami, who is one of his instructing spiritual masters, probably his main instructing spiritual master after Rupa. But what is this offering blessings? What does that mean? Well, this is not a mistake. It is not a mistake. This is coming from Baladev Vijayabhushan's commentary on Tattvasandarbha. Baladev Vijayabhushan says that blessings are there in the word Srila. Srila Rupa Sanatano. Sanatanam. Srila Rupa Sanatanam. In this context, so the blessings are in the word Srila. That this means that Rupa and Sanatan, they have the blessings of Sri. Isn't that interesting? They have the blessings of Sri, the goddess of fortune. And, of course, this means the supreme goddess of fortune, and not in the sense of opulence, but she's also the presiding deity, ultimate presiding deity of spiritual knowledge. So she has blessed them, Rupa and Sanatan, with transcendental knowledge. Then, there's Baladev Vijayabhushan also draws our attention to the word Jayatam, all glories. Jai, of course, is being translated, and we generally also think of it in terms of all glories, that sense. But in another sense, the word Jai means victory. There's kind of like a military sense to it. Or, you know, something like that. gaining prominence and becoming established in a superior position, controlling position over others. So Baladeva Vijayabhushan says that Jayatam indicates their victory and glory in being the supreme saintly persons and the supreme teacher. They have defeated all the other scholars and big acharyas and shown their glory beyond all of them. And he says, in this way, this verse offers blessings to the readers by reminding them to offer respect to Rupa and Sanatan in that way. You follow? That we are being reminded of their glorious position, most glorious position amongst all the other teachers and acharyas, and therefore we are reminded to offer respect to them in that context. So now, text 4 and 5. In text 4 and 5, he's offering obeisances to Gopal Bhatta Goswami and talking a little bit about the background of the Satsandarbhas. Gopal Bhatta Goswami apparently did some preliminary work that is not available, you know, in the specific form that Gopal Bhatta, you know, whenever he concluded his work on it, whatever form it was in at that point, it's not available to us. So Jiva Goswami says, though, that he did do some preliminary work. And he talks about that preliminary work. He studied the writings of the venerable Vaishnavas. This means people like Ramanuja, Madhvacharya, and the other great acharyas in the different sampradayas. Then, in text 5, he says, it was a rough draft. Some parts were in order in terms of like a systematic presentation from one topic to another. But others were not. There was not really connection. It just bring knowledge from here and there about different things and just kind of putting it there on paper without organizing it. So some was organized, some wasn't organized. It was more like notes. And some parts were only suggestive fragments, just little, you know, sutras, very brief statements kind of pointing towards certain subjects, but there would have been a need to have developed those ideas. So Jiva Goswami says that I, an insignificant jiva, jiva ka, an insignificant jiva, I have gone over all this and rewritten it. So generally the understanding from our acharyas is that Jiva Goswami, that Gopal Bhatta Goswami's work was not very, quantitatively was not very great. It was just something quite rough. And Jiva Goswami's contribution was really the major contribution. You know, another very interesting point in this regard is that Sanatan Goswami, in his Hari Bhakti Vilas, which is also a very important book, explaining all the rules and regulations. It's also a big book. It's not as big as the six Sandarbhas, but it's big enough. Many rules, so many do's and do nots and so on. But at the beginning of Hari Bhakti Vilas, Sanatan Goswami says exactly the same thing. That Gopal Bhatta Goswami, he did preliminary work and he did so much work, and I've taken his work and done certain things to it. And even actually when Sanatan Goswami first published Hari Bhakti Vilas, he put the name Gopal Bhatta Goswami there as the author. Yeah. Although, you know, in the longer run,
the opinion which has evolved is that it's also mainly Sanatan Goswami's work. And Gopal Bhatta, he did more just like preliminary work. So Gopal Bhatta, he's a very important person then. He's also young amongst the Goswamis. Amongst the six Goswamis, there are two generations. There's Rupa and Sanatan. Then Jiva, of course, is their nephew. There's a whole generation. And he's the son of their young... Yesterday we were reading the Mangalacharana, and we completed the first five verses, so we'll begin today from verse 6. This is quite a striking verse. Oh, well. Yeah, it's quite a striking verse of the nature of Adhikari. Yesterday we talked about the Anubandha Chatushtaya, and first part of that was Adhikari. That in the Mangalacharana, it is not uncommon that the author will include some description about who the book is intended for. So here, Srila Jiva Goswami does that in a quite vivid way. Only those who have no desire other than to worship the lotus feet of Lord Krishna should read this book. Everyone else I warn off with my curse. Yes. So this book is not meant to be just one of these philosophical books suggesting different ideas for the purpose of discussion or anything like that. This book is meant to present Krishna. By this book I'm meaning actually the entire Satsandarbhas. Yeah. Tattva-sandarbha is an introduction to the Satsandarbhas. So in the Satsandarbhas, Srila Jiva Goswami wants to present Krishna. Krishna is the absolute truth. Everything is connected with Krishna. The goal of life is to realize one's relationship with Krishna and to come to the point of love of God. So, this book is intended for that type of person, then, the devotees and the aspiring devotees. Everyone else, he says, I warn off with my curse. No, actually, it's a fact that in Tattva-sandarbha, because Tattva-sandarbha is kind of setting the scene, really, to the rest of the six sandarbhas, establishing the basis from which we're going to work in the six sandarbhas, how we're going to work, what we're going to refer to, and defining in at least simple terms, introductory terms, what we're going to be talking about. So, we do find in Tattva-sandarbha that Jiva Goswami, he does do a little bit of debating and arguing. We'll see that in the second section. There's the Praman section, which we're going to be beginning shortly, which will establish how Srimad Bhagavatam is the authoritative source of knowledge. And then the Prameya section, which begins around about verse 28 or so, 29, around about there, is going to be defining what is the tattva, what is the truth which Srimad Bhagavatam is talking about. So in that section, the second half more or less of the book, then Jiva Goswami is going to be discussing particularly Mayavad, a little bit of Mayavad, a little bit about Buddhism, because that was still prevalent to some extent when Jiva Goswami was present. I mean, in India. Nowadays, you hardly find it really in India being practiced. But it was a little bit there when he was present. However, mainly, it's the Satsandarbhas are there to glorify Krishna, describe Krishna, and how to approach Krishna in many, many ways, and very beautifully. So therefore the book is intended for the devotees, those who are serious. He says here, Bhajanai ka bilash bhai. Those whose abhilash, their eka abhilash, their only desire is Sri Krishna Padam Bhoja Bhajan, to worship and serve Krishna's lotus feet. And then the others, the non-devotees, he says that you please don't touch this, and he puts it very strongly, but I'm warning you not to touch this, otherwise you get into trouble. So we might think this is sort of overdoing it a bit. Why does it have to be so strong and so heavy, really? In fact, it's super heavy, isn't it, to talk about cursing anyone? Thing is that Jiva Goswami, actually, he is being merciful, really. He's being merciful. Because these people, just like you know, we have our 10 offenses, and the 9th offense is to preach the glories of the holy name to the faithless. The reason being that those who are really faithless, if you try to preach to them, then it'll tend to make them worse. They'll become more agitated and more anti-Krishna and commit more offenses. So better just to neglect them. In fact, in his commentary on the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Jiva Goswami, that's the Krama Sandarbha, there in the second chapter of the 11th canto, where the three levels of devotees are described, Kanishta, Madhyam, and Uttama Adhikaris, starting around verse 40-odd or so. So when the Kanishtas are described, then, of course, there are different types of Kanishtas, and there's, Jiva Goswami talks about a Kanishta who is sort of hardly really a Kanishta. He's very materialistic. And he just cannot distinguish between the devotees. He maybe doesn't even take the devotees seriously. He just thinks that it's me and Krishna. And I'm great. I'm really a great devotee. And all these other devotees, he doesn't take them seriously. So such a low-class devotee, Jiva Goswami says, that the right way to treat him or her is neglect them. Just don't deal with them. Yeah. So, like this, Jiva Goswami doesn't want to deal with these people because he doesn't want these people to read his book, because if they do, it's just going to agitate their minds more and make their situations worse. You know, there are parallels also, just like we're coming up now to the month of Dhammadana, and on the Diwali day, the 7th of November, that is the day that Dhammadana pastime took place, and Krishna delivered Nalakuvara and Manigriva, who had been cursed, to become trees. So it's very clearly described there, Narada Muni cursed them, and he was not just being uptight or something like that, but he felt this is the only way to help these people. So similarly, Jiva Goswami is feeling that, you know, as far as this book is concerned, that type of envious person, atheistic person, that the best thing I can do for them is just tell them not to read the book. Yeah, so he says like that. And, oh, of course, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, you may know, there's one verse. I don't have the reference for it here, but it's there, where Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says that this book can only be understood by the devotees and not, he says, by the pig-like non-devotees. And he says, I'm very happy about that. I'm glad they can't understand. And even in Bhagavad Gita, that is, what is that, chapter 18, verse 67, Krishna says, this knowledge should not be explained to those who are not austere or devoted or engaged in devotional service. So it's the same idea, basically. But Jiva Goswami is really expressing himself strongly. So then, on to verse 7. This is very clearly of the Namaskar variety of Mangalacharana verse. Offering obeisances to the teachers. Now I bow down to my initiating spiritual master and to my spiritual masters who taught me the meaning of Srimad Bhagavatam. Having done this, I declare my desire to present this encyclopedic work, Bhagavat Sandarbha. We mentioned yesterday about the use of that term, Bhagavat Sandarbha. So, one interesting point here is that he is doing something here which is not exactly strictly in terms of what Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says is there in the Mangalacharana, which, you know, is not a problem at all, but it's an interesting point. He is taking a vow. He's taking a vow that I declare my desire to present this encyclopedic work, this vast work. This is common practice, actually, in sacrifice, Vedic sacrifices, that whoever is the priest who is to perform the sacrifice, at the beginning, it is very common that he will express what they call his sankalpa, his desire, his determination, that I will complete the sacrifice, come what may. And in fact, there is a practice that even if the priest is a householder, he will accept a danda for the duration of the sacrifice to indicate his complete surrender and, you know, like he's just going to do it and that's all there is to it. Yeah. And nothing's going to come in his way. He's absolutely determined. So Jiva Goswami is doing that here. Now, yeah, we made a little note here in the points under commentary defining the term Sandarbha. So Srila Baladev Vijayabhushan, in his commentary on Tattva Sandarbha, on this verse, he gives a definition. And if you remember, we wrote the points which make up the definition on the board. I hope you wrote them down. I'll read this verse. Gudartasya prakashascha sarokti shreshtata tata nanarta vatvam vedyatvam sandarbha kachyate budhai. The wise call a composition a sandarbha when it elucidates a deep subject matter. We wrote that on the board. When it focuses directly on essential details, when it is excellently composed, when it conveys various complex ideas, and when it is readily understandable. So we wrote those points on the board. I hope you wrote them down. If not, and if you would like them, why don't you just look over the shoulder of someone sitting near you who may have written them down. So, yeah, this Sandarbha then, for something to be a Sandarbha, is not just an ordinary thing at all. In fact, there are not many books which are called Sandarbhas. It means a very exacting type of philosophical presentation done very carefully, very very clearly, with great attention to detail, but clearly in the sense also that it can be as easily understood as possible. This is what a sandarbha is. All right. Then text 8, the last text in the Mongol China. This is an important text because here he is really defining the subject matter in a little more detail. Lord Krishna's abstract feature of pure spiritual existence often goes by the name Brahman in the texts of the Vedas. His partial expansion as the Lord of creation regulates the material nature, Maya, and exerts his control through further personal expansions. A single manifestation of his personality, called Narayan, rules sovereign in the transcendental sky beyond this universe. May that same Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, be pleased to grant pure love for himself to those who worship his lotus feet in this world. So there we have Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. And then we have Krishna as the last word in the Bhagavan feature, or even more clearly, as we mentioned, I think, on the first day, that he is the source, the original Bhagavan, Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. All those other expansions, all those other persons who this term Bhagavan can be applied to, like Narayan. Narayan is specifically mentioned here as being the most important form of the Lord in the Vaikuntha realm, specifically. So Narayan is just a part of Krishna. Krishna is actually that original Bhagavan. So may Krishna then be kind enough to help the devotees and to give the devotees pure love of God. Those devotees who are really trying, they're really trying to approach him and surrender to him and serve him like that. So let us go on then into the text itself. We said today we would read verses 9, 10, and 11. So let us just read through them. I'll just read through the translations. As you can see, from now on, Jiva Goswami's writing is in the form of prose. He quotes verses, but he himself is writing in prose. All right, so now we're beginning section 2. Section 2, the general idea there, is to establish Srimad Bhagavatam as the supremely authoritative source of knowledge. And from this goes on from verse 9 to verse 18. By the time we finish verse 18, then this goal has been achieved. Anyway, for the time being, subsection A, we have called the Vedic literatures are the best evidence. So I'll just read through all the translations right now. Text 9, the previous verse, verse 8, which we just briefly discussed, has alluded to a few topics, just very briefly mentioned or indicated, four things, in fact. Krishna, then Sambandha, or the relation between Sri Krishna and the words that describe him. The special understanding of the term Sambandha, not the normal, or at least, you know, the more common type of understanding that we might have. Abhideya, what is enjoined to be done, or in other words, the recommended practice of worshipping him, and Prayojana, the final goal, which is love for him. Before we can elucidate these topics, we must first settle the question of Praman. That is, we must determine a reliable means of ascertaining facts. Where are we going to get our information from? To start with, an ordinary person's means of knowing, sensory perception, and so on, are imperfect, They are tainted by his four defects, beginning with incorrect judgment. And moreover, they are simply inadequate for establishing contact with a reality whose nature is supramundane and inconceivable. Text 10. Therefore, direct perception and so on are unreliable sources of valid knowledge. We want to understand that object which transcends everything and is the shelter of everything and whose nature no person can conceive or imagine. For this purpose, our source of knowledge can only be the Vedas, which are comprised of non-material sound. The Vedas alone should be our praman. There should be a full stop there, sorry, after sound. The Vedas alone should be our praman, because they are externally self-manifest. And from them, in fact, have been derived all departments of knowledge, mundane and spiritual, among all schools of thought in human society, since time immemorial. And text 11. The conclusion stated in text 10 is corroborated in such statements as the following, from Vedanta Sutra 2.1.11. Because logical conjecture is never conclusive. Then from the Mahabharata, logic cannot explain things that are inconceivable. Then again from Vedanta Sutra, because scripture is the source of knowledge about the absolute truth. And then again from Vedanta Sutra, because revealed scripture, on the other hand, is based on Shabda Praman. And then a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, spoken by Uddhava. For the forefathers, demigods, and human race, O Lord, the Vedas are your own perfect eye. They are the best instrument for seeing what cannot ordinarily be perceived, and for ascertaining the goals and means of progressive life. So, in this way, Jiva Goswami establishes that the Vedic literatures are the best evidences. Now, you'll see on the board here, we have written 10 terms. So, well, actually, in our little brief notes there, in the commentary for text 9, we mention 10 types of pramans. So there they are. First of all, though, of course, we should mention about the four defects of the conditioned souls. I assume you know what they are. Make mistakes, to be illusioned, to cheat, and to have imperfect senses. So, the human beings, he mentions in text 9, are not good sources of knowledge. Brahma, B-H-R-A-M-A, means to make mistakes. Pramada, to be illusioned. Vipralipsa, to have the cheating tendency. And karana patava, to have imperfect senses. Then in his commentary on this verse, verse 9, Jiva Goswami lists out these 10, that traditionally these are 10 pramanas. They can all be considered pramans, or possible sources of knowledge. And we're going to explain what each one means, of course. But just write them down for the time being. Hope you can read my writing. So the first one.
Almost there. Got it?
All 10? First one is pratyaksha. It means direct perception. As we go through the remaining 9, you'll see that other than the third one, shabda, all the others really, they are actually dependent on pratyaksha. Yeah. Direct perception. You see it, you hear it, you touch it, like that. However, we have just heard how because of the defective nature of the human condition, direct sense perception is not really so reliable. In fact, Jiva Goswami has written it off already. Yeah. However, in a very general sense, if you consider what are different means by which we could acquire knowledge, then certainly direct perception is such a thing. Pratyaksha. Then Anuman means inference.